If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the No Bad Dogs podcast. This episode is with a dog owner with two GSPs, which is one of my favorite breeds, although I don't have one, never have. German Shorthaired Pointers, amazing breeds, working breeds. On where to start with not only two dogs, but two dogs who are having issues that you guys probably have, like dogs running up off leash and dogs reacting to people outside and things like that. So this will be a good podcast filled with good information for you guys. Netherlands, I am coming to you. So Europe, Belgium, Germany, all over there. This is your opportunity to come and hang out and have your dog work with me and come and meet me. And it's going to be a lot of fun. Tickets and info are in the description, as well as Nashville, Tennessee. We are coming this fall as well, which I'm very excited about. Tickets and information is in the description. If things aren't sold out yet, head over there to get your tickets to come and audit and watch and or also have me work with your dog. Limited spots available. All the information we talk about in this podcast, including the courses, are listed in the description below. Enjoy the podcast, guys. Thank you so much for the support, watching and listening. I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful day.
Yeah, so I have two GSPs. One is the mother. She's about a little over four years. And then she had a litter about 13 months ago. So I kept one of the puppies. So he's, yeah, 13 months, I guess. But the main thing is I just wanted to kind of consult with you before purchasing, you know, one of your programs or a couple of them. As you know, GSPs are very high energy dogs. Mm-hmm. My girlfriend and I are elite runners, so that's why we got them. So we do run them a lot. But the mom, she's just a bit reactive and kind of with other dogs if she's not in that kind of neutral territory. I would say, well, even so, sometimes in neutral territory, she's not like overly aggressive. She won't go just kind of go after a dog. But if a dog comes up and kind of sniffs her and she doesn't know the dog very well, she'll snap at it. And so sure. I kind of want to kick that habit.
Are these random, like off leash dogs, or are these dogs she knows?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I don't know what the best method, but, you know, I mean, with these dogs, this is my opinion, is like, you know, I can't just walk them on a leash. It doesn't really, I mean, for exercise, that is. So mm-hmm. if I don't run them, like I ran them this morning, there's places where I live where I can, you know, I run them off leash and I have e-collars for them, and they're pretty good. They don't run away from me. but there's a golf course near my home where in the evening it's opened up for dogs, and so they'll just kind of run around and sniff and stuff. But you know, if a kind of a random dog comes up to her, she'll and sniffs her. You know, I can tell when it's going to happen, and she'll snap at it. She won't go after it and start fighting or anything like that. But whereas, you know, the boy, he's like just very friendly and fine, not mm-hmm. a problem. And in other words, the mom's always like, she's good too. She's very friendly, very happy dog. But, you know, I don't know if it's when I first got her. I got her during, like a lot of people during COVID in the spring of 2020. And so, you know, I kind of was limited to how I could socialize her with other dogs, I think. And then, I was hoping to have her trained. And so I did send her to, what I thought was going to be beneficial, a trainer for about 2 months. And I think the guy just, he didn't really train her at all. But I think he had just too many dogs. And so I think she was probably, you know, in a kennel and probably frightened and having to kind of fend for herself in some capacity. So, I don't know if that's where that stemmed from, but, I mean, you probably know kind of how this starts with dogs, but in other words, with dogs, she does know. She knows. She's like very, very friendly and sweet. But you know, here's an example. I had gave one of the puppies to one of my friends, and he came over a couple weeks ago. And you know, she's just very reactive the whole time, very territorial, and you know, kind of snapping at the dog, the puppy. So. Her puppy, I should say. But like if it's kind of neutral territory, she won't go seek out and be aggressive to a dog. It's just if the dog kind of comes up and sniffs her. So that's kind of the one thing I want to see if I can work on and what the best approach is for that. And then of course, just kind of getting basic obedience down with these guys. What's kind of started another thing lately is they just kind of, they're just barking like crazy at random noises outside, you know, that mailman comes or there's other dogs on the street and, you know, they just go crazy. So, and that really wasn't a thing like a year ago. So that's kind of picked up.
Okay. So let's start talking about the mom. So so with the reactivity to the random dogs, that's something that it's a really tough problem to be dealing with, only because your success is completely predicated off of the other dog, unfortunately. So let's say you're out for, it's like the way that I explain it to people is it's like somebody rear ends you. Uh-huh. It's like you were doing everything right, but what are you going to do? You know, it's like, and then it's like, hey, how do I not let this happen again? You know, and it's like, well, it really has nothing to do with you. You didn't do anything. You were listening to music in your car on the way to work and somebody hit you because of their negligence or whatever. So when you have the off-leash dogs approaching, so there's a couple ways to handle it. The first way is to, and again, some of these are inevitable and some of these are unrealistic to some people, but typically, like if I'm going to an area and there's consistently off-leash dogs, I try not to go there anymore. But again, that might not be realistic. But you can't telling your dog not to react negatively towards another off-leash dog that they don't know is a bit like telling somebody not to react when you throw them into a cold plunge. It's like it's really difficult and almost a little unfair to say, hey, this is going to suck, but act normal. It's really hard. And that's just from my professional standpoint of the realities of this, right? It's like somebody comes up and pushes you and yells in your face and you're like, hey, play it cool.
Yeah.
It's like, so these things happen to dog owners all the time. And I talk to dog owners about it all the time. And I typically just tell people to try to manage the situation the best you can. And that's really the only way to handle it because, and let's say an off-leash dog, excuse me, approaches your dog. Your dog's like, whoa, whoa, hey, chill out. Who are you? Where are you coming from? And she might get a little testy. She might correct. She might air snap. She might bark. And that's totally normal behavior for most dogs. My personal female would do this. She would have the same reaction. I wouldn't expect her to go into a play bow and say, "Hey, let's be best friends," like some golden retriever puppy.
Right.
But I also wouldn't expect her to try to kill another dog. I think these fair boundaries that dogs have are very natural. And I, depending on the, again, everything depends on the other dog's demeanor, unfortunately. And that's the hard thing about this is, again, you getting rear-ended has really nothing to do with you. And there's not much you can do other than handle it when it happens. So I typically will either work on a recall if you can get ahead of it, which is you see an off-leash dog, they're kind of sharking around. They're basically just, the owners are irresponsible and letting their dogs off-leash without little control. Like if I let my dogs off-leash, I'm sure you are too, head on a swivel, making sure, oh, I see a dog, come, boom, we leash up, we leave, or we walk past, or whatever, we handle it. We don't just figure it out and say, hey, let's see how this goes. Although,
yeah, I mean, like I said, I have the e-collars on them, and you know, and that's another thing I want to talk to you about. I mean, I've had them for years, and I've watched a lot of, you know, videos, but I know there's also just best practices. But you know, I'm not like shocking the crap out of her. I don't believe in that. You know, like and there's the beep function, so yeah, I can tell when, you know, I'll kind of, another dog's approaching her, and I'll just give her a little beep, hey, it's come over here. But you know, that's something I'm you know, obviously concerned about, the random dogs. But you know, the other thing is like, the territorialness of, like, you know, like I get that example I gave when my friend came over with one of her puppies, you know, and she's just, maybe she doesn't, you know, doesn't remember it well enough. But you know, is that kind of something that can be fixed too? Or sorry, I mean, it's probably go back to what you're talking about, but
yeah, it's, so if the question is, if it's any dog, can it be fixed? It's more of a personality trait than a behavioral trait, I'll say. So, meaning it's not obedience. It's not your dog breaking it down or breaking a sit or not recalling. This is more of your dog's personality. This is how they genuinely feel at a very primal, instinctual base. So you don't have a lot of information or say into how that plays out because your dog is reacting to getting a situation, right? So yes, I don't want to say there's nothing you can do because absolutely there is, but still at the end of the day, those things still aren't as guaranteed as good obedience. Meaning if you said, hey, my dog's pulling a lot, Tom, I would say, yeah, you can absolutely stop that. My dog's not coming back. You can absolutely stop that. My dog is not placing, etc. These are behaviors. Right. These are training protocols. This is obedience. But when you have a dog's personality shift into, I don't like random dogs in my face, that's more of a personality thing. Again, it's like somebody, a 35-year-old male being 5'2", and they want to be 6'5", and they're working hard to get that. It's like, no, this is your genetics. This is how you are.
Okay.
So there's things that you can do. Again, like this isn't one of those things that you can change like you can with behavior as far as obedience goes. Like my dog pulls, I don't want him to. This is one of those things that you can, again, there's things you can do. There's protocols you can do. There's desensitization that you can do. But again, at the end of the day, it still isn't going to warrant a guaranteed friendly encounter because it's her personality. It's kind of like forcing your kid to eat their vegetables. You know, they don't want to do it, but they'll do it if they have to. They're tolerating it. So think about it that way. And again, realistically, here's what I think you should be focusing on is when you, so doing, I think the most important conversation here is the most efficient way and effective way to be able to have these dogs be introduced is more of the roadmap for you. Okay, Tom, I have a dog and she's kind of iffy with new dogs. Yep. What's the best possible way this can work? That's more of the conversation that I think you should be thinking in your head. And it would be, okay, for an example, just to make this easy, friends coming over with a puppy. Okay, let's go for a walk together. I'll meet you outside in 10 minutes. Just let me know when you're here. Okay, I'm here. They text you, they call you. Okay, let's go for a walk. And this is just like best case scenario. So this is just the most ideal thing. You can take or leave whatever is applicable to you. But if it were me and somebody's like, hey, I want these guys to meet, I'm not going to say, yeah, just come on in. Boom, the dog flies into their space. They're running right around. They're wreaking havoc. They're sniffing. They're grabbing. They're in the food bowl. They're in the water bowl. They're grabbing toys. It's a guaranteed way to make a situation bad. Guaranteed. Okay. So what you do is you go for a neutral walk. Neutrality is they're not meeting. They smell each other. They see each other, but they're out for a walk. And it could be 5 minutes. It could be 30 minutes, whatever is realistic. Then you keep them on the leash and then you come inside and you kind of monitor it. And this is an opportunity to keep everybody safe. The other thing before that step would be if you have a fence, that's the best next step is just dropping the leash and have them meet through a chain link fence. Because the reality is a puppy is going to be, hey, who are you? My name's this. And they're jumping right, and they're playing and they're biting and they're play bowing. And your dog is going to correct that behavior, which is totally normal. And in my experience, I allow that to happen within reason as long as the dog is fair about it.
Right.
And that's typically how we try to properly introduce the dogs to say, if they're going to meet, let's try to do it in the best way possible. And that would be my advice for that. You're not going to be able to change her personality to go, you know, I find puppies annoying and I don't want them in my face and I don't want to play. Because they're working dogs. GSPs are working dogs. So they want to run, they want to work, they want to sniff, they want to chase, they want to point, they want to play fetch. They're not bred to be social animals. Maybe a show line golden retriever or a show line pet Labrador retriever. They're not working dogs. So their behavior, their temperament, their genetics are little social butterflies, just like with people. You know, friends and family in your group that you'd say, this person can get along with everybody. And then you might say, this other person, not so much. It's just the same thing with dogs. Everybody has these different genetics that make their disposition a certain way. And so that would be the way I personally, if I were you, to be, that's exactly what I do with my Dutch Shepherd Lakota, with new dogs, including my new puppy. Still, it's this kind of ebb and flow, touch and go, red light, green light type thing, because she's this very serious working dog that only is strictly waking up in the morning to go and, air quotes, work, whether that's chasing a frisbee or whatever. And there's the goofy puppy that's play bowing and pawing at her and jumping at her and trying to be this, oh, let's just run around and sniff each other's butts and play. And she's like, dude, no, I'm way too mature for this shit. And so even before I got on this call, I had them outside and she has her frisbee in her mouth and he's looking at her like, let's play. And she's like, dude, don't touch me. Get away from me. And so I put him in his crate with a bone and I was like, nah. Just to give you context, just because there's training and then there's personality. And I don't want you to beat yourself up over something that you're never going to be able to control because you'll lose your mind and being frustrated. But I think if you're going to do puppies that are going to be in your life, just do it the right way. Introduce them slow. And then with the off-leash dogs, going back to what I was talking about, is it's a lot of management with obedience and just being realistic. So you have the e-collars, they're off-leash trained. I do the same thing with my dog. If I'm out walking her, she's off-leash because she can be. She's earned that. There's no reason for her not to be. And if I see a dog, I recall her. I put her into a heel. We move past the dog. Once the other shit show of a dog on a harness jumping and barking at us is past, I break her and she goes right back to her business. So that's more of a management situation. I wouldn't be sitting there going, oh, let's let this shit show of a out of control, neurotic, unbalanced, unhealthy relationship and dog owner meet my dog, because my dog's going to be like, this is a hot mess. I want nothing to do with this. This is the most chaotic, unorganized thing. And that's not, if I were you, I would not be even entertaining the idea of that. It would just be a management thing of, I'm going to, you know, not my circus, not my monkeys type thing. Okay, my dogs come here, let them pass. Okay, break, go back to doing whatever you're doing.
So, you know, it just made me think, you know, I mean, who knows how any of this stems. I mean, I understand like what you're saying with the working dog component. That's absolutely true, right? They're constantly focusing on other things. I would say in general, you know, I mean, part of why I bred her was because and the majority of dogs that friends took because of her disposition, her personality, because she's just so friendly and sweet. And I'm wondering when she was a puppy, I do recall now when I was letting her kind of walk around and she did like puppies do, you know, kind of sniffing other dogs. And I think she was kind of attacked. And I'm wondering if that created this kind of fear in her. Because there's not a lot of other dogs like coming up to her and jumping on her or anything like that. That's not what is happening. It'll be like, you know, a very friendly dog just kind of comes and she might be sniffing in the bush and it comes up to her and, you know, sniff her for a little too long, and then that's where she'll kind of snap at. So is that something you think it's based on her personality or based on fear of some sort?
Could be both. Okay. It definitely could be both. It could be one of those things that's like, hey, you scared the crap out of me and you're freaking me out. Get away from me.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't sound like she's the type of dog that is really going to love random dogs coming up to her regardless. So I think it could be a little bit of both.
And so what about, I mean, like, you know, certain dogs that she knows, right, that she kind of grew up with, she's very tolerant of, you know, they can, and then of course, like her, you know, the boy that I have, I mean, he's always trying to play with her and she's never aggressive to him. And I would say in the last year, she's really kind of got a lot more playful and, which I never, you know, didn't notice as much. She was very independent. Lately she was, you know, definitely playing with him a lot more and they have fun together. But, that's why, you know, I mean, I totally understand the personality. I just wonder, can that be changed in any capacity? Can you desensitize a dog to become less, you know, less, I mean, she's not like, you know, tail tucked between the legs, but I wonder if some of the reactivity comes from a place of fear.
Yeah. Yeah, somewhere, so. Absolutely. It could be. Yeah. So that's where confidence comes in. And that's where desensitizing patterns. And that's just with any type of scenario. It comes with desensitizing the situation, but it has to be, you know, realistic and fair. And I think that's the key component here in this conversation is the whole thing has to be, again, realistic and fair. Like,
okay.
Yeah. So for an example, let's say you want to introduce her to dogs on leash, you would find the right, you're out for a walk and you have another neutral dog that's curious, but isn't going crazy. And you would let them meet and you would say, good girl, good job. Mm-hmm. And then it's a good experience. And you'd say, okay, have a good day. And you'd leave and you'd get her all hyped up and say, yeah, that was a good girl. And that's like confidence where she might be a little nervous. She might be a little insecure and you're kind of coaching her through it. You're like, good girl. Everything's okay. And you're without going overboard of like letting her hear your nervousness, of course. It'd be a lot of that. It'd be a lot of like, good job, good girl,
okay. Good.
And you just have those really good experiences. And those good experiences would lead to confidence. And then the confidence would lead to better encounters in the future. And that's what confidence is they're like, I can't do this. And you show them, yes, you can. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. And they're like, I can do this. And you're like, told you. And that's what our jobs is in as dog owners is to do that. So anyway.
So does your reactivity course, what's that focused on then? If it's kind of, is it focused on kind of what we're talking about or is that not really going to be is relevant to
the reactivity course is a very comprehensive course on identifying what your dog is reacting to and why.
Okay.
Then after that, it brings you through the process and how to counter it. It brings you through the process of having the ability to not only counter it, but to modify it and to change the perspective and perception of how your dog feels and all that stuff. So it really helps you identify what's going on with the reactivity, and then helps you go through the process and how to make it better. It also goes over all of the concepts of equipment and when not to use it and all that stuff. It's really a comprehensive deep dive into, and we go over a lot of like reactive dogs, but I mean, a lot of people who take the course have a reactive dog that they've been struggling with, and they don't have the resources and the time to maybe go and it's a little bit of both. I think some people take the course because there's nobody in their area that they've been able to find to help them, and it's very comprehensive. And I'm going over footage of real behavior modification cases. So it's dogs that have come in with severe reactivity and leave in group class perfectly fine. So it is very fundamentally effective at a fundamental level. Like, it's not just theory and me talking. It's actually me showing you clients of, here's this dog walking in on Thursday and here's this dog sleeping in group class Saturday. How did I do this? Let's go over it. But with her reactivity, I think it's more fair and warranted reactivity. It's not a lot. It's not going to be as comparable to a lot of the dogs in the course. However, it does go over the management that we spoke about briefly in this call too. So that's that.
Okay. Would you say like the kind of other things I listed at the beginning, for instance, other dogs on the street, they can obviously hear them and smell them or whatever from inside, and they're just, barking constantly. And I was traveling last week and I had to stop in a motel on the way back, and, it was like every 5 minutes.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 today.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
So just anyone walking by, they would just start barking at them, and then they go, he's following her lead, so he's the boy, so he's starting to do it as well. Is that a reactivity thing, or is that just a basic obedience thing that can be corrected?
Good question. I think it's both. I think it's dogs saying, hey, something's out there, and you have to have good enough obedience to counter that. The reactivity course does cover how to deactivate and to disassemble the reactivity. But again, I think what you're dealing with is more normal, justified, warranted type of stuff. So
yeah,
I'm at a random place my dog has never been with the person they love and care about the most, and somebody walks by or a dog walks by and the dog's, you know, jump up and start reacting. I mean, that's a warranted thing. And then it comes down to the deactivation with obedience. So it'd be come, place, down, stay. Because again, like, that's warranted stuff. It's not like you saying, I went to this random motel on the road and my dog's barked at a stranger, and I'm like, really?
Yeah.
That's insane.
It was more like inside the room, you know, just like I was trying to, you know, because I was on the ground floor, and there were just, I mean, every single person walking by, they just started going crazy.
That would definitely be covered in the reactivity course, because it goes over how to deactivate and how to correct properly, and you know, what skills do you need to then, because it's not just about correction. It's not just about rewarding. It's not just about handling. It's a combination of how do I get this animal that I love and care about that's thinking these things to think differently. And so it's a huge combination of things.
So yeah, like for like the doorbell ringing and them not barking every time, like that's something that would be covered in that course versus your general obedience. Okay.
Yeah, it'll go over how to deactivate that stuff. And again, just be realistic of, somebody rings the doorbell, your dogs bark. Okay, that makes sense. What do we do next?
Okay. Let's see. That's what I want to ask you about. With training them, is it best to do it separately, or could they be both trained at the same time, or what do you think is the best approach?
Good question. You would train them separately, and then you would bring them together. I think that's a really important question, and it's good. It's realistic to train them separately to just kind of teach them, hey, here's how do we behave, and and then from here, after we behave, and then we bring them together to say, okay, let's behave together, and that's how that works.
Okay. On that same note, do you see any, you know, just be with this breed, right? Like, I mean, as you know, you can't just take them for a walk around the block. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't even warm them up. Like we just went 10 miles this morning, or, you know, they're already ready to go again. Do you see any negatives of me running off leash with them with the e-collars in terms of obedience? I mean, they don't run away from me. These guys go 100 yards ahead of me. They're just sniffing around, and they always kind of stop and look back and wait for me to kind of come up to them. But are there any sort of negatives in doing that while I'm trying to, start training them?
It depends on what you're training them on. Like if it depends, like they have to, I think that they should be, be counterproductive. I think it's, I think it's important that when you're like, let's say you're working on, I don't know, recall for an example or whatever. And you let your dogs off leash and you tell them to come and they don't. It's like, okay, that's counterproductive. Cause when you let your dogs off leash, that's the next level to advancing everything. And if you're working on baseline obedience and working on foundation and then you let them completely off leash, then it's counterproductive.
It's hard. I know what you're saying, but it's like, and then, but I'm just trying to like, how do I, just because of this breed, like they have to be, you know, they're truly exercised, right? So it's like, how do you do that with them while working basic obedience and not being counterproductive?
Well, I think just separating them with the commands that you're giving and, you know, the things that you're doing. So like for me, the break command really helps with identifying when it's time to work and when it's time to, you know, be a dog and have a break. And so like when I'm out with my dogs and I'm healing and I'm breaking and I'm whatever, all that stuff, working my dog on obedience. And then when I break the dog, then they can do what they want. So I think if you're letting them off leash and being dogs and doing whatever they want, it's a break, see you later, do what you want. And then when it's like, okay, it's time to work, then it's your opportunity to then really dial in your obedience and your structure and your rules. And but if they're off leash and they're, it's hard. It's like not my, I don't think many people have the good, and I don't think many people have a good enough obedience to let their dogs off leash but still struggle with basics. Do you know what I mean? That right. question usually doesn't come.
I know it's a unique breed, right? So it's like,
yeah,
do that with, okay. In terms of the e-collar, so and maybe this is covered in your e-collar training too, but do you recommend until they're, you know, a lot more obedient that the collars are kept on them full time, or is it only like, for instance, right now I just use them when I'm obviously when I'm running with them, they'll be on the e-collars. And then I, you know, like I said, in the evening I'll go to this golf course where it's, you know, kind of a free for all. I mean, they just go around, they're running around, sniffing around, and I will recall them with the e-collars then. But aside from that, when they're in the house with me all day, I don't have the collars on. So is it something I should be keeping on them until they're, you know, quite obedient, and then keep it on them for a little bit longer until they've actually learned to be obedient without the, you know, use of collar?
In what context? Like with the e-collar? Go ahead.
Like you have your puppy, right? You said you have a puppy, right? So
yes.
Like, are you keeping that e-collar on him all day long, or only using it when you're doing like training sessions?
Good question. I, when I'm conditioning the remote collar, it's on pretty much all day. And it's even on before we start training or even turn the remote collar on just to start conditioning the dog. So it's on often when I'm conditioning, but it's not necessarily being used the whole time, obviously. So I, So anyway, yes, well, it's on.
Like if he doesn't come to you, right? It's just as an example, and you know, say he's with you around your, I don't know, situation you have, if he's, you know, in a crate or whatever, but you'd say you just have him around the house and he's just not listening to you. Do you have the e-collar on then? And will you then, you know, use a correction with the e-collar to have him come over to you, or?
Yeah. I'll yes. Okay. Like I will definitely enforce behaviors. Here's the thing is the more you use the remote collar off leash when you're training, the less you have to actually use it in the future, because the dog is like, oh, I can't get away with anything anywhere. So I'm just going to listen. In the beginning, it's come, the dog's 30 feet away from you. You enforce with the remote collar. The dog's like, holy shit, you can touch me from here. They come zipping back. And that's just how that goes. They're like, okay, there's no off limits. There's no place I can't go. I'm just going to listen to you. And it's not about, you know, crushing the dog. It's about quite literally having the opportunity to communicate effectively with your dog anywhere on your property.
Right. Yeah. And like, you know, I will say, I should probably get your e-collar training. I mean, like I said, I've watched a lot of what you've done, and other videos from other trainers as well. And so I 100% believe in the e-collar. I will, and I don't know the ones you use, you know, like mine, I have a couple of different ones. But one of them has, like I just got one, it's a DT system. So it's used for gun dogs. And I got that because it has a very, very high pitched like noise. So you can, I think it's to teach dogs to be on point. But I've been using it because the boy got away from me. Like he didn't run away, he just got separated. And I, you know, he went back like 3 miles to where I start this run and he was just waiting there. But I've been using that. If I can't see him, I'll use that. And like within 2 seconds, he comes right back to me. But I mean, I'm not actually using the, you know, the stimulation. I don't have to do that half the time. And with a female too, it's one of those educator ones. I'm sure you've seen the little circular ones. And with that one, say we're out for a run, you know, half the time if she's, you know, she's too far for comfort, I will give her a little beep, just the beep, and then she'll stop and come back. But what the question I have for you is, you know, with these dogs, their prey drive is just so high. You know, they'll be like a bunny and they will just go nuts, and I could have the thing turned up to the highest level and it just doesn't stop him or her pretty much. He's pretty good. He isn't really taking off. If I give him a little more stimulation, but her, I mean, like I was, you know, last week, I mean, it was at a level and it's just funny. Like if she's not focused on something, the level would be more than sufficient, you know, just a little bit of a tweak and it gets her attention. But then she goes crazy for some, you know, some rabbit or mouse or whatever it may be. And it's like, she's just full on that. Focused on that. So what do you do in that kind of situation? Or is she just not earned the right to be able to do that yet?
Yeah, I think it's a tough question because there's a lot of context that has to be answered first. But I think it's both. I think, yeah, maybe the dog isn't ready for that. They don't have the skill sets to accomplish that, A. And then the next part would be like understanding the remote collar you're using and how it was conditioned. Yeah. You know, that's there's two huge questions that go into that. It's like my dog didn't respond to you know, my level 6 on my e-collar. Like, what should I do? It's like, it just depends on what e-collar you have. It depends on.
Yeah. And that's like, you have one, I saw one. It's what we were on puppy. That's a little bit, not the shepherd, but the other one you have, it's,
The Borble.
Yeah, so he's got a little bit like a, you know, wrinkly neck, right? A little thicker neck. And I'm wondering, like, I have, you know, different straps. Like, you recommend, like, I have an expandable strap, so should not be using that. You know, it has a little bungee. Like,
yeah, those are fine.
But, like, I just wonder if the contacts aren't, she's not feeling it at times, you know?
Yeah, could
be one reason why she's just not reacting.
Yep, so. Exactly. Could be so. All of those things. Yep. It could be all of those things. That's what I'm saying is like,
there's context, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot. There's a lot that goes into answering that question. A lot, you know, and a lot of it is, you know, the ability to identify how the e-collar was introduced, what e-collar you have, so on and so forth. There's a lot that goes into it.
Okay. What else? I guess, yeah, kind of, like, you know, maybe kind of a last question is, kind of given what I've given you and told you, what do you feel is what would be best, my best serve, like which courses that you have?
I would say their e-collar course is probably the one I would be choosing if I were you out of all of them.
Okay.
Because that's really gonna help with your ability to communicate better off leash and really understand where your training's actually at and really auditing that. So I mean, both the reactivity course is good too, but we also have a package of multiple. I don't know. I think that there's many, many opportunities there. 'Cause I think that you have to really pick your battles here. I think that you have a lot of goals, and I think that
Yeah.
it's important for you to figure out what really you want to work on. And then from there you can
Yeah. Well, let me kind of tell you that. So, like, I mean, I don't think with this. I mean, maybe it's possible. I don't. You know, in an ideal world, what I would love for these guys to run like right next to me, right? Right. I don't think that's ever gonna happen, just with this breed. Maybe it can, but. More so than anything is I just, you know, I want your kind of basic obedience. I want them to come when called, sit, you know, stay. I want them to not that this happens now, but you know, I want them to not you know, obviously pull all those sort of things. I don't want them to be able to, you know, run into the street, anything like that. You know, basic kind of obedience. And I'm not trying to do agility with them or anything of that nature. I want just kind of, you know, a well-rounded behaved dog and so forth. So, like, do you think is that your kind of your basic kickstart course or?
Yes, the Kickstarter course is really gonna see like where you're at. Like it's gonna give you the opportunity to really audit where you're at with your training, because a lot of people think they're a certain way. You
Right,
know, they're
right, right.
like, oh, this is I don't know. I'm here, and it's like, no, you're actually not.
Right.
You know, so I think it's, again, I think it's tough to say like where you're, I don't really know, you know, 'cause a lot of people think that they have certain levels of obedience, and the actuality is they're nowhere near as that. They're not even close to that.
Oh yeah, I don't think they have that by any means, you know. I do think they have. Which is a good thing, I think. In terms, like, I think they are quite trainable. This
Absolutely.
breed, you know, they do want to please,
Absolutely.
and obviously very
Yes.
food motivated, which is probably helpful in some ways. But
I think you
so,
can,
like,
yeah, no,
yeah.
I'm with you. You can train them to do anything you want. GSPs are unbelievable animals, and the breed is phenomenal at training. I just think that it's hard for me to tell you what exactly course you need, because it's, I don't know really where you're at. So I
Oh, I
would.
know what I'm saying. They're not obedient at all, you know, right now. You know, I mean, they're not, you know, like you know, the puppy. It's just, you know, especially him. It's like, you know, like jumping, right? Like someone comes in the door, he's just jumping. So, like, yeah, that's sort of, is you know, it's a big puppy. So, like, that's
So
kind of
yeah, so then I would,
no obedience there. Yeah.
yeah, I would go Kickstarter course, e-collar course. And I think they come in
Okay.
packages too. You can get them in packages where you can get both for a cheaper price.
So no reactivity. You think that's not
Well,
really needed there.
yeah, I mean,
Okay.
if you're having like, you know, huge issues with reactivity, then yes, but I just think like judging by what you've told me, I would go Kickstarter course, because everyone needs that, to then the e-collar course. That's what I would do.
Okay. Kind of another random question. Is this something that you, and I probably have to cover specifically in your course, but is there a way to teach a dog to you know, go to the bathroom in a specific area of a yard? Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty easy. It takes a considerable amount of consistently Really, really important. So what it comes down to is getting the dog on the leash, going outside, and letting the dog go to the bathroom, pee or poop in a specific area. You'd mark it, you'd cue it. So you'd go potty, and then you keep them on leash, and there'd be this little area that they'd go. The thing is the area has to be different from what they're on. So it has to not identify, it's not the right word for it, but it has to be different from what they're on. So they know that, like, okay, this is an acre grass area. Yeah. Okay. Where do you want them to go? And I think, like, having either a little cone or like a tennis ball or a soccer ball or something out there that they have to go around, and you would just go out there and just say, go potty, and you'd kind of keep them in that area, and they'd go, and then pretty soon that they would just go there. And that way, when you let them out, they go into that spot because that's where they always go.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I was just going to ask you a few more questions about it. I forget. I guess since, you know, she's, given that she's 4 years old, is it really unreasonable to think she can't be trained well still, or is that not a concern?
Nope, not a concern.
Okay. I think that's it. Do you have any kind of other advice or?
I think you should figure out your goals for sure. I think it is writing out your goals and really being clear with yourself in the roadmap of what you want to do, I think is going to be important for you. I think that's something that everyone should do, really, is if you're in a situation like you are where you're like, I don't really know what I should or shouldn't be doing, and I'm not sure which direction I should go in, and you're just having a hard time identifying what the problem is, I think just having a really clear roadmap is the first place to start. Just really writing out, again, what your goals are and maybe even the steps you're going to take to accomplish those goals is important. So that's what I would do getting started. The courses that we talked about are definitely going to be helpful for sure.
Okay.
Kind of put you into the right direction, put you into the right training roadmap and start you off with success. And that's where I would start. And then outside of that, it's, again, it's like without having context and seeing what's going on, it's tough to.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
One thing with the pulling, I mean, is this covering your course, forgive me. But you know, they're a very strong breed. And so, do you like, you use prong collars, right? On some of your dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something you would recommend for a dog like this? Or like, I mean, I have a slip lead. There's also like, what is it, slip collars? Is that the right term?
Yeah, there's
like, what would be best for teaching, you know, them not to pull. And then there's this other, I mean, you've probably seen, I'm sure, of course, there's like, I bought these leashes from, there's these GSP breeders, Standing Stone Kennels, but they have they call it easy lead. It's basically that, what's the little harness that goes over the dog's nose?
Like a gentle leader or the head?
So it's like a gentle leader.
Head holding.
Yeah, but it's like that, but without having to have that. So you use, it's the same concept. You put the leash on and then you just do this little, you put it through the loop and then you just do a little twist of the leash. It's pretty smart. The same concept as a gentle leader,
mm-hmm.
Without having to put that on the dog.
Yeah. I think, you know, I'm really big on what works. I over the years as an expert in what I do and obviously as a professional, I have found things that have worked very, very effective and very, very efficiently. And mm-hmm. I think for me, that's the most important thing. And so over the years, I've accumulated pieces of equipment that I know 100% work way more than others. and will yield faster results. And so I'm not married to anything in particular outside of what has consistently worked in my field. And so I'm not 100% sure what the equipment you're asking is. So I can't, I'm not.
So I guess like for pulling, like what would you recommend? Is that, or is that something just a basic obedience thing that can be taught through your course? Or is there, should I be using a prong collar on them until they, they just stop pulling?
The prong collar is a safe way to handle a dog that is pulling hard, but it's also the most effective and efficient way to enforce a behavior that they know. Meaning if they don't have a good heel, the prong collar is not going to be sustainable. It might get the dog to stop pulling, but it's not going to be sustainable. Like, I want you to be able to unclip your leash and ask your dog to heel, and they're like, got it. But so work more on the heel work and the behavior instead of trying to figure out. The equipment is like secondary, but the equipment is any equipment with anybody, right? I pick up a camera to shoot a photo. If I don't know how to shoot a photo, the camera's not going to work. If I'm a contractor and I show up to build a house, but I myself don't know how to build a house, the equipment itself isn't going to get the job done, right?
Okay.
Like, it's the same thing with dog training, that if the dog doesn't know heel, the equipment is going to fail at some point. It might work in the beginning, but, it's not going to be sustainable.
Okay. So on that note then, like, I remember this one dog trainer was using an e-collar and, kind of like I was seeing your videos, if the dog's pulling away from you, kind of change direction or, give a little tug, but they were using the e-collar to give them that little notification. Is that something you recommend, or is that, again, like just a thing?
That's not
as big in the larger scheme of things,
Well, it's really just a preference on how you're handling it, how you're actually handling the dog, and how you're I don't know if handling is the right word. It all just depends on how you are going into your heel. That's just one little tiny piece on introducing the heel command. Like the outside turn to what I call calibrate the dog into you is just your ability to get the dog's attention, but it's not going to teach the dog heel necessarily.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's just part of, I don't know how to explain it, but doing an outside turn to get the dog's attention is a very, 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 very small piece of the process.
Okay.
It's not like doing a directional change on a dog to teach them heel. It's not like that's the thing that makes the dog heel. That's just a very small piece to, it's like adding pepper into a huge dish. It's like, does adding pepper make the Alfredo? It's like, it's a piece to it, but there's so much more. And then there's the flame and there's the pan and the temperature and all the other ingredients. So it's not really applicable to, that's just like a directional change. It's just like one tiny piece to that.
Right. It's not the foundational component.
No, it's just part of it. It's just part of the picture.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, cool. This has been very helpful. I have a question. Do you have like these consultations? Do you only have hour long ones, or do you have half an hour?
I don't know. It's a good question. We've never done anything outside of an hour, just because an hour is typically when anybody says half an hour, one more, and then what?
Sure.
Yeah, and we've done that before, where people have even been like, "I only need a half an hour of your time," and then maybe we bill them for half an hour, and then it's 50 minutes later. Yep. Now I'm late for everything else I have to do. So we don't typically do anything more or less than an hour, just because that's more than enough time to really consult about the things that we're working on and the goals that we have. Yeah, it was nice to meet you. Good luck with everything. And GSPs are amazing. dogs, great breeds, lots of fun. I think you just have to get started on writing out like your game plan and your goals and trying to figure out a way to get there.
Okay.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.